That's Genesis chapter 16, verses 5 through 13. And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong be done me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me. But Abram said to Sarai, behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her what is good in your sight. So Sarai treated her harshly, and she fled from her presence. Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. He said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from and where are you going? And she said, I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarai. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself to her authority. Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they will be too many to count. The angel of the Lord said to her further, behold, you are with child and you will bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has given heed to your affliction. But he will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of all of his brothers. Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her. You are a God who sees. For she said, Have I even remained alive here after seeing him?
Well, good evening. I'm glad to be here tonight. We made it. Took a little longer than I thought. Every time I come a different way. So I have my daughter, my oldest daughter, with me tonight. Her name is Elizabeth. She's the redheaded child. And there's a lot of opinions about redheaded children, and they're all about right, I think. So she's been a good girl. I'm so proud of my two daughters. I've been pretty lucky. When I first was presented with these children, I don't know if that's the right phrase. You know, I thought it'd be like raising coon dogs, but not so much. Coon dogs definitely listen a little better. But she's 19. She's going to college to be a nurse. To go into the local community college there. And she's in love. She's got a boyfriend, and all she does is talk about him and talk to him. I'm blessed because he lives in Hawaii, and she lives here, or with me, so that's good. He's been in the Marines. How many years have you been in there? Just 2 years. He does a good job. He's a hard worker. And she has me to thank because I'm the one that told her to text him, see if he'd like to be more than just a good friend. They went to camp, Christian camp, all those years. Not the one that Van goes to. There's another one up there called Camp Provida. And so they met there, and, you know, they became good, fast friends. I thought, well, see, I watched him. He treats his mother and his sister like gold. So I said, why don't you text him and see if he'd like to go out? And she said, Dad, you're an idiot. We're not going to do that. We're just good friends. I said, give it a try. So she works at Wendy's, and she called me later, and she was crying. And I said, what in the world is wrong? And she said, well, he said, yeah, he'd like to. I thought, well, what are you crying for? So it worked out all right. And so he's a Marine, and he's a good boy, and he's a good Christian, so I'm glad of that. The other one's homesick. We thought she'd come, but Elizabeth said she didn't get to sleep till 5 o'clock this morning, so neither one of my girls have been feeling well. But I'm glad she's here. So if you want to know anything about me, you ask her. You know what? Don't ask her, actually. That's probably a bad idea. But yes. So, again, I'm glad to be here. I better look at the time. I don't want to keep you too long. I would like to speak to you tonight about quite a few things, but in particular, this biblical account here concerning Hagar. Now, this is one of those accounts that I've always had trouble with. It's always been something that's hard for me to understand. And if you go to the book of Galatians gives a little more commentary concerning it. But still, you sit back and you see these families in the book of Genesis. And I mean to tell you, if you want to read about dysfunctional families, open up the book of Genesis. Because every one of them was. And especially this one. Here you have Abraham and Sarah. They're living in the Ur of Chaldees, and God calls them to get up out of their father's house and go to the land that I've promised you, with this condition that when they go to this land, they're going to have a son, a child. And this promise has been made, and they're old people, all right? Now, they've been married a long time. Abraham's 100 years old, and, you know, she's in her 90s. She's hitting 100. And back then, young ladies would marry when they were about 12 years old. And so they'd been married 80-some years. And you'd think they'd have it figured out, right? I was telling Elizabeth on the way down here. We were talking about relationships. And I never give much advice, by the way, on relationships. But I guess I can give a little bit. All relationships have problems, right? Anything you do. You know, myself, I could stand before you here tonight and tell you that I have made about every mistake you can make in any situation on any given day. And all the mistakes I've ever made, by the way, have had one thing in common. I was there. So I'm one of these guys that probably learned the hard way. But you know, those three wonderful words in a relationship, the ones that they say are the most powerful, I'm convinced are not the words, "I love you," but the words, "Let it go."
Yes,
yeah, you don't. That's two words. You'd be good to learn those. But let it go. How many times with your spouse and your friends and your children and your parents do you have to win an argument? How many times? Over and over again. I think maybe those three words we could all learn a lesson from. But Abraham had learned something, hadn't he? And yet, he had so much more to learn. Sarah moved out of that house in the Ur of Chaldees in the middle of the most bustling metropolis in the world, Babylon. That's where they came from, the ancient cities. And so she was a city slicker. And she leaves there to follow God, to follow her husband, to the middle of nowhere in the desert to raise goats on sand. And yet she has this promise that she's going to have a child. And now 10 years have passed. Okay, I get up, I move. I'm 100 years old. 10 years go by at this point, and still no child. And she begins to fret. You know, when mama's not happy, nobody's happy, right? Isn't what they always said? And so that tent was not a happy place. 10 years. I can imagine she was making it a little hard to live with when it came to Abraham and her relationship. And she has this plan. She has this handmaid, the Bible says, a servant from Egypt named Hagar. And by the way, that word servant there means slave. They had a slave from Egypt who lived in her home and watched over her and took care of her. And here is a young woman, and she says to her husband, "Abraham, we still ain't got that kid." That's probably not the most proper grammar. And I'm paraphrasing. "But we still don't have this child that God promised us. Maybe we need to come up with a different plan." And so she decided that Abraham would marry, by the way, this handmaid, this slave girl. And so this is what he does. And he has a situation where now his wife Sarah is in the home, and now he has another woman to take care of, to look after, who is pregnant with his child. Now then. Sarah comes to him and starts complaining, right? I can imagine the conversations that must have happened in this tent. So Abraham, I want you to take this girl, this young girl we got in our house, and I want you to have a child with her. And if Abraham is like a lot of men I know, he probably knows when to keep quiet and when not to say something, and he probably says, okay. And now it happens, and she comes to him, and she says, you see what you've done? You've got to do something about this. And he says, what? Okay. What are you going to do? She's your handmaid, Sarah. You treat her however you want to treat her. Now, why did he say that? Because like a lot of men, he doesn't want to deal with the problems that he needs to deal with. He doesn't want to be the leader of his home, and he just wants the problem to go away. Now, I can relate to that. I drive junk, by the way. I don't drive anything but F-150 Ford pickup trucks. And I've had what, Elizabeth, in your lifetime? 4 of them? And I don't buy them unless they got 200,000 miles on them. And I usually get 200 more out of them. But they have problems. They make... The one I have now shakes a lot and shimmies. There's no heater in it. The seat doesn't work, so you have to lean way back. There's a lot of other problems. I made my own tailgate out of coil stock when I'm roofing. I put that together. But that's the price you got to pay for luxury, right? So when things go wrong and it makes those sounds, I generally just turn the radio up because the radio works. And we want problems to go away. And here Abraham now wants this problem to go away. So he says, Sarah, you deal with her however you want to deal with her. And she, the Bible says, treated her harshly. Now, can you imagine how she treated her? Sarah has been his wife for so many years. And all she wanted was a baby. And she was promised by God. And now this girl has a baby. What seemed like a great idea in the beginning turned out not to be such a great idea. And now they're paying the price. And Abraham has trouble being the husband he needs to be. And we're going to see that he has trouble being the father that he needs to be. Would to God that we had great fathers in this country. Godly fathers. You know, the one thing that 85% of prisoners in America have in common is they grew up without dads. Imagine how this country, what this country could be with good, godly parents. And here then we have godly parents, Abraham and Sarah. Abraham is the father of the faith. And yet he's confronted with this situation, and what's he going to do? This story doesn't make any sense to me. He sends Hagar out in the desert, gets rid of her. How do you explain such a thing? And yet there's a lot of things that I don't understand. There's a whole lot of things I don't understand. Came to a stop sign the other day, and it said, no right turn. And then I moved 2 feet above it there, and I saw, when making a right turn, use right lane. It doesn't make any sense to me, but there it is, right? A lot of things don't make any sense. But when life doesn't make sense, I think the first thing we need to do is remember God's promise. Romans 8:28, do all things work together for good? And that's a question I hear a lot. You know, there's not always a happy ending, is there? I mean, things can go south pretty quick. Things go wrong. Last few weeks, we've had terrible weeks. My niece had a baby, and the father of the baby was either shot himself or was shot. We still don't even know the real situation. A friend of mine stung by a mosquito in India and died in a week. And we just see all these problems, and things can go south pretty quick, and we're full of all these storms in life that we have to deal with, and sometimes life just doesn't make any sense at all. But we need to remember that God has promised us certain things. Do we rely on God's plan? Do we? You know, sometimes we think that we can do better. So many times in my life, I've thought that I could do better than what God wants. You know, God doesn't work on our timetable. I learned that a long time ago. And things that we want in our life, God doesn't always want with us. And I stopped asking why a long time ago. But what I noticed is that when it comes to the provident character of God, by that I mean when he exercises his providence, Someone once said, you never see the head of providence. All you ever see is the tail of it. Once it's gone by, I was going home the other night from doing some work down in Fairmont, West Virginia. It took me forever to get home. Without a heater, it takes a lot longer, it seems. But I was listening to the radio, and a Garth Brooks song came on. Thank God for Unanswered Prayer. And I never really listened to that. Maybe some of you have heard that song. It's kind of an older one now, I guess. But how many times did you think, Lord, why aren't you answering this prayer? There's been times that I have been on the floor in prayer after hours and said, Lord, you are supposed to be my friend. You can fix this and nobody else can. And you're not doing it. Why? And then when I'm older and the time has gone by, it seems a lot clearer, doesn't it? Do we remember God's promises when life doesn't make sense? When there's no explanation? You know, God's Bible doesn't give explanations for what He wants. It doesn't explain why things are the way they are. When we used to study through the Old Testament, my children asked me questions like, why do they have to do that? Why in the world? Why couldn't the Jews eat lobster? Some of you might love red lobster, right? Well, why? God doesn't give us an explanation. He only gives us a directive. He says, go into all the world and preach the gospel. And then He says, by the way, they're going to hate you because they first hated me. That's my directive. There's no explanation. The commission has been given. I'm called to move forward. A lot of times, when you're young, your parents will tell you to do something and you ask why, right? My mother would always say, don't even ask why. Just do what I say. I'm always telling that to the girls, just obey. I've spoken, right? That should be enough. But I say a lot of things, don't I? The Bible just gives a directive. It doesn't always give an explanation. It's like driving on one of these old dirt roads. Scott, out there where you're at, I see there's a lot of dirt roads. You'll get on a dirt road, and you might not know where you're at. Okay, now I've never been lost because I'm still here, right? But sometimes I'm out there, I'm not sure for sure where I am. And on these dirt roads back where I live, you can only see about 15 feet in front of you. By the way, my lights on that truck, too, are really dim. But you can only see about 15 feet. Now, I never stop. I don't stop. You just keep going, right? You can only see about 15 feet, but you don't stop. The Bible doesn't always give that explanation. Directives, that's what we get. Directives that don't make sense. What was the answer the angel gave to Hagar? Go back and submit to Sarah. Now think about that. She's treating Hagar like a piece of garbage, like the slave girl she is. She is carrying the son of Abraham. And look how she's treated. And she says, I'm done. I'm not going to take it anymore. It's like that old Johnny Paycheck song. Take this job and shove it. I'm not working here anymore. But the only problem with a slave is when you run off, what happens? You know what the penalty is, right? She made up her mind, I'd rather die in that desert than stay here. And if they catch me, I'm going to die anyway. But the angel meets her and he says, I have heard you. God heard her. He heard her cry. And she says, all right, the Lord has been hearing my prayer. What do you want me to do? How do we fix this? Anything but Sarah. Go back and submit to Sarah. Go back and submit to Sarah. I tell my friends, my kids, anybody who has trouble at work, a lot of times they want to talk about their boss, and I tell them, all you do, in word and deed, do all to the glory of God. When you're at work, glorify God. Whatever it says, if it's fair and right, you do it. When I went to Israel as a teenager, my grandfather, they used to be able to walk you right up to the plane. You remember those days? And he told my mother, he said, go, I got to talk to this boy. And he came over and he handed me his umbrella. I thought, well, he's got to give that to me. No, he wanted to stop so he could tell me one thing. When you go over there, Josh, keep your mouth shut. Right? A lot of times Christians have trouble getting along with people. We have trouble treating each other just like human beings, let alone loving each other. Jesus said in John 8, "They will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another." By the way, you want this church to grow? Love each other. And when people come here and see that, they're going to want what you have. Go back and submit to Sarah. Go put up with that boss. How about that? And so she does that. God's directives sometimes might violate our feelings. There are things that the scriptures tell me to do. By the way, there are things in this Bible that Josh Hetrick, I wouldn't do them the way God did them. Did you know that? I would have different idea on things. Lord, this is how I would do this. But does it matter what I think? It doesn't. I've been given a directive, not an explanation. And things might hurt my feelings. I might want to go do this and do this, but God says it's sin. Right? Some fellow might say, you know, I don't feel like a man anymore. Really? I feel like a woman. And the Bible, when it tells me I can't do that, that violates my feelings. I was reading an article the other day. A woman who was supporting transgender agendas, she had a blog. I think I told you guys this maybe. But she goes down to Disney. Did I tell you this? All right, you'll get it again, even if you didn't. Or even if I did. She goes down to Disney, and she's taken Disney World, or Disneyland is in Florida, right? Anyway, she's in there, and she goes into the bathroom, and she's got her daughter with her, and, you know, she's taking time here, and she's trying to help her daughter, and there's this bearded guy in the corner just staring at him. And all these women feel so uncomfortable, so she comes back, she gets on her blog, and she talks about how uncomfortable she felt, and begins to say, maybe I had it wrong, and immediately her blog is taken off the internet, and she loses everybody that reads. And someone will say, that violates my feelings. God's directives might violate our feelings sometimes. God tells men to treat their wives right. Maybe you might say, I don't want to treat her right. God says you have to. Sometimes it's hard. Go back and submit to Sarah. Well, when things don't make a lot of sense, remember God's promises. Remember to rely on God's plan. Thirdly, and very quickly here, recognize God's provision. As we go on here in the book, you find out that Sarah is going to have a lot of trials that she's going to go through. She's already had them. But ultimately, they have their son. Abraham and Sarah have Isaac. And Isaac has an older brother, Ishmael, Hagar's son. And Hagar has raised the boy, and Abraham has helped. But there is this jealousy that has continued to exist between Sarah and between Hagar. You know, we sometimes miss God's provisions because of our feelings, don't we? The way we want things to turn out don't always turn out that way. And we miss all the blessing that God has given us. You know, we're going to have Thanksgiving here in a while. And that's good. That's wonderful to remember to thank God. But, you know, if you look back and you think about your worst day, and I've had worst days. I've had some pretty bad days in my life. Not a lot. I've really been blessed by the Lord. But even on my worst day, you know, good things happened that day. You ever thought about that? The Lord is always blessing us. James says, all good things come from God. And how many good things do we have? And yet, when the storms of life come, and when we have trouble understanding God's providence in our life, we need to remember to rely on His provisions. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. That is my favorite psalm. I know that's cliche, but Psalm 23, it just gets better and better to me. When I was in Israel, I used to stand and watch those goats or sheep, whatever they are. They all look the same. They're hairy and they aren't cute like some of these sheep around here. But you look out across that hillside, and the whole hillside is made of sand and dirt and gravel, and I don't see any grass. And those goats are eating all day long.
And I wonder, what in the world are they eating? And what they're eating is this. In the morning, in the shade of a rock, just a little bit of shade, a little bit of dew will gather, and a small tuft of grass will come up next to that little rock. And that shepherd is leading those sheep from rock to rock, from tuft of grass to tuft of grass. And that's all they get. He leadeth, meaning green pastures. Those pastures aren't like the pastures you see along these hillsides. God is leading us from tuft to tuft, like the shepherd leads from one little clump of grass to the next. God is saying, I'm going to lead you and sustain you and give you all that you need to make it to the next rock. And when life gets hard to understand, we need to remember to rely on God's plan and remember his providential care. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Let's not let our feelings keep us from understanding what God has for us in our life. And lastly, when life seems so hard to understand, we need to rest on God's presence. In Genesis 16:13, God sees her. He saw her. Back here, when he first found her, he found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness. And he heard her. God has heard you. But down here, it says that he saw her also. Here we have this situation. This lady, now, she's gone out into the desert to die. All right? Now, they lived in the area of Beersheba. And today, if you go to Beersheba, that's the end of the road, folks. You go down there, and all that's left after that is a Negev desert. And when you went out into the desert on your own, you went out there to die. All right? And she decided, finally, she was going to do that. Because Abraham sends her away with enough water for one day. And I don't know that Abraham was happy with that. But God said, do you remember what he said to Abraham? Listen to Sarah. I imagine, maybe I'm cynical, but when Hagar heard that, I can imagine she said, we're always listening to Sarah. But she goes out there, and God hears her again. She props her son up by a tree, and she walks across the field so she doesn't have to sit there and watch him die. And God meets her again. The angel of the Lord comes to her. And he says, God is still hearing you. God is still seeing you. Now, I'll give you the application and you're done. I won't keep you much longer. Here's the point. Look at what has happened because of these decisions. Ishmael. Who was Ishmael? Who is Ishmael the father of? Who claims their descendancy or claims Ishmael as their ancestor today? Arabia. What today is the Muslim world. He said he's going to be a great nation. And through him came the Edomite, or the Edomites, and just on down the line until you find the Arabic world today. And he's going to be a wild man. I think the scripture you read said a wild donkey of a man. I've never read that particular scripture. But he's a wild man, and his hand is going to be against everybody. Now, when you look around today, what do you see? Self-fulfilling prophecy, right? All because of bad decisions. When if Abraham and Sarah had waited on God and done it God's way, it would have made a difference. Being a parent is a great responsibility. Being a spouse is a great privilege. But it doesn't always work very well when we want to do it our way. And that's really the message of this story. Things didn't turn out very well. We want what we want. I heard a story one time from the Inuits. The Inuits are great at trapping. Have any of you ever done any trapping? My mom wouldn't let me trap. I was allowed to hunt. But she hated to see me trap. But all my cousins did, and I'd go with them. And for us, a fox was always the hardest to trap. I understand now coyotes are even harder. But there was a time when this country was full of wolves, by the way. And the Inuits have made a living out of trapping wolves. And you know how they do it? They take blood from a seal, and they cover their knife with it. And they put it on a pole and they stick it in the ground and that snow, and they let that blood freeze on that knife like a big blood sickle. How about that? And so these wolves, they come in. And what they do is, because they can't trap them, they come in and they want that so bad. And they see that food and it's the easiest food to get, and they just go up there and they lick that knife till it's clean. That might be giving you that feeling like, ugh, right? And then they go off and they die because they've cut themselves all over the place. And that's temptation, folks. And that's the way we make decisions sometimes. The easy way, what looks right, how we want it. I told you the three most important rules or the words in a marriage. Let it go. I'll tell you what, there were times when the girls were growing up where I was right a lot. Always right. And I could prove it. But you see, I'm loud. And I'm letting that be known. And I could be right a million times. But who did they hear getting upset? Did I win? Did I really? You could be right and still be altogether wrong. We need to start doing it God's way. In everything we do, do all to the glory of God. Or we're nothing less than that wolf who's supposed to be the smartest creature out there. And yet we kill ourselves over temptation in doing what we want the easy way instead of God's way. We do that when we raise kids. Elizabeth was talking to me. Her mother-in-law wants her, well, her soon-to-be mother-in-law wants her to come live with them. I ain't living with them, right? I said, that's right. Abraham said, leave mother and father and cleave unto wife. It's not always easy. I grew up with an Italian mother. My mother said, when you turn 18, you're out of here. And she did it with my brother, and I knew I was up next. You see, she's doing it God's way. You know what I find today? I find a lot of young people who can't do anything right because their parents have been doing everything for them. And they keep doing everything for them. When I moved out of my house, I was so scared to ask my parents for anything. I didn't ask them for anything for 20 years. Now, all pride is gone. And if they want to hand out some money, I'm willing to take it any time. But what are we doing, folks? How are we raising kids? We have eagles down home now. You guys got bald eagles up here? You know what that eagle does? That eagle likes to make nest. I'm going to tell you two animal stories and then I'm done, all right? I've already lied to you. I said I was done a few minutes ago. But that eagle down there, she goes out and she starts to make this nest way up high on a pole. And the first thing she does is she goes out and she gets briars and thorns and she goes and finds the most jaggedy rocks she can. And that's the foundation for that big nest. Did you know that? And then she has these beautiful feathers that she loses and she puts them down and she'll go grab pieces of string here and soft stuff and she'll just line that nest. And when those babies are born, they love that nest, and they want to stay there, and they don't want to get out of it. And when it's time for them to go, what she starts doing is she takes those big talons, and she rips all that soft stuff away, uncovering the briars, uncovering the rocks, uncovering all those jaggedy edges, and those kids realize, I need to get out and be an adult. And that's God's plan. And here then, we find in the end, two children, one that goes away to Egypt that we never hear about again, and one that turns out to be spoiled, who is the child of promise. Where do we go wrong? All right, the last story, and that's it. I don't always understand everything, but when I watched that video of that giraffe giving birth, did you guys see that last year? Did anybody watch that? So this giraffe is going to be born, this baby giraffe. And everybody is excited about it, and I'm watching it on YouTube, and then I'm watching it, and then 2 hours go by, and I'm still watching this, and nothing's happening. Finally, the baby giraffe is born, and, you know, I can really relate to this baby giraffe, because it's born, and it can't stand up, because its head's too big, and it's wobbling all over the place, right? And I think, man, how cute. I mean, how pitiful, but how cute. I see a lot of kids like that. They're so ugly, they're very cute, right? Here is this giraffe, and it can't even stand up. Its head's too big. And the first thing the mother does is, instead of goes and helps it up, she turns around, and I've been around horses my whole life. I know what's coming. She takes his hind legs and kicks that giraffe 10 feet this way. And it crawls over to her with that big head, and it gets up, and finally it's there, and she does, guess what? Kicks it again.
And do you know why? Because out in the wild, in the bush, there's a hyena looking for a little baby giraffe with a head that's too big. And there's a lion right behind it. And she's teaching it what it means, how to get ready for life. The lessons from the family in Genesis does that for us. It teaches us that the lion is always in the weeds. It's still there. And that sin lieth at the door. And how prepared are we going to be? Parents, you don't have to be your kids' friends. That'll come. I'm hoping that'll come. But you got to be their parents. And you got to do it God's way. Tonight, I challenge you to do it God's way. Maybe there's someone here tonight who has a need. We want to encourage you to come. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. If you have any other need or need us to pray for you, we encourage you to come also as we stand and sing.